Welcome to Coach Me, the podcast for women who want more. More clarity, more confidence, more you. We're Tanu and Catherine, friends, working moms, businesswomen, and real-life coaching buddies.
Each week, we cut the BS and bring you insights, tools, and truth bombs that help you show up stronger at work, at home, and in life. If we can coach each other through the chaos,
we can coach you too. Welcome back to Coach Me. Today, we're getting into something you've definitely felt, even if you haven't named it, unconscious bias. While it's often dismissed as too HR or soft skills, we believe the reality is unconscious bias isn't just a moral issue, it's a business one. Especially in light of recent pullbacks in DEI efforts in the US, diversity, equity, and inclusion are important topics anywhere. Bias aren't always dramatic, though. Sometimes it's the little moments like who gets more airtime in meetings or who's seen as high potential and who is quietly sidelined.
Yep, that is bias in action. And it doesn't always look evil. In fact, bias is often just mental shortcuts. Our brains are wired to process an insane amount of information every second. So we rely on heuristics, you know, those shortcuts, to make fast judgments. And the problem is that what's fast isn't always fair or accurate. So here's an interesting stat. According to research by McKinsey, companies in the top quartile for ethnic and cultural diversity are 36% more likely to outperform on profitability. Isn't that an interesting connection? So when bias influences who gets hired, promoted, or heard, you're not just being unfair, you're potentially leaving money on the table. So in short, bias costs money.
Wow, so in layman's terms, this means that more inclusion means more profit, statistically speaking.
Yes, it does.
Okay, I guess you've convinced me to look into this topic a little bit deeper. I was a bit hesitant about this topic at first because I thought maybe it's a little dry, but bias costs money. You got me there. And from our even day-to-day lives, not just business, we know that bias, whether they're unconscious or not, they do really shape and impact decisions. And that is often without us realizing it. So it is this unconsciousness coming into play. But there are also different types of bias. And dear audience, we will go through the most common ones and dig into those bias that do the most damage at work, especially when it comes to those high stakes topics like hiring, promotions, and performance conversations. And we have an expert amongst us, Tanu. I know you live for this. And you have posted a LinkedIn article on this topic a while back, which we will, of course, link in the show notes. Why don't you start and just take us through the most common and most damaging types of bias?
Thank you. Yes, it's a topic very close to my heart. It's something that I talk about actively at work as well. And whenever there's a discussion on bias, I'm very quick to jump in. So the first one is the sneakiest one. It's called the prototype bias. It's the idea that there's a default person for a role. You might hear it as, she doesn't seem like the typical engineer. Oh, I didn't realize you were an engineer. If someone's dressed well and shows up in high heels, you're expecting an engineer to look and carry themselves a certain way. Or he doesn't look like a leader. So one of the things that a colleague of mine told me about was he walked into a sales meeting with this dyed hair. What's that hairstyle called? I forgot the name.
Fashionable?
No, the hairstyle.
Mohawk.
Mohawk. Yeah. So one of my colleagues told me about walking into a sales meeting with a mohawk hairdo, and he told me how the client was taken aback when he looked at him because they'd been speaking on the phone all this while. But when he saw him in person, he was like, oh, I didn't expect that. And he was obviously like, what did you not expect? No, I mean, you come across as someone so professional. I didn't expect you to be so cool. So obviously the client backtracked and called him cool, but He knew what the idea was behind it. So yeah, that's prototype bias for you. Our brains have a prototype for roles based on past exposure, and when someone doesn't fit that mental mold, we subconsciously doubt their fit.
That's crazy. In one of my early jobs, I was a, you might not guess that now, but I was a bit of a party animal in my youth. but I still excelled at my job. I had top performance, but my manager didn't trust me because we were very sociable at that job. We would go out together. So he saw me partying at night, and then he didn't trust that my performance would be good at my day job. So he kept watching me. He kept like literally having an eye on my every move. And the reason behind it was that he felt that I was a liability because he saw me let go and have fun. So he couldn't believe that I also can be serious and professional, despite my constant efforts and my successes as well, that spoke for themselves, really.
And that's the cost, Kathy. You know, people overperform just to compensate for not fitting the prototype. Meanwhile, there's others that are coasting just based on assumptions that are going in their favor. All right, so next up, confirmation bias. This is our brain's greatest echo chamber. We form an impression of someone, good or bad, and then we selectively collect evidence to support that view. So let's say you think someone's difficult. Every assertive email from them becomes proof. You ignore the times they were collaborative and they were going along and doing well with the team.
Oof, yeah. So basically, we all turn into defense lawyers for our own biases, right? I find this confirmation bias especially upsetting because it's actually your brain just trying to protect you. It's trying to spot patterns that it already expects. But when we leave this unchecked, your brain can be left to misinterpret neutral signals or withdraw or even self-sabotage before the real problem exists. So let me give you a practical example. I am working from home 100% of the time. And if I now would have a new boss, I could keep thinking that he has an issue with me being remote. And every time he forgets to CC me on an email or he forgets to give me an update or something, I'd add that to my mental proof list, keeping up this assumption that he has an issue with me being remote. And therefore, he consciously cuts me out. And I leave no room for other interpretations because if a situation keeps repeating, like him forgetting me in one way or another, then my guilt or like whatever it is in my brain keeps wiring it in a way like, you see, he doesn't like you work remotely. It keeps proving the point, right? If I would take a step back from the situation and realize consciously this might just be a bias I have, I could also try and interpret that behavior in a different way or monitor him a bit more broadly, speak to colleagues or something like that. Hey, is he forgetting you as well? Like that kind of thing. Like just find other sources of proof to get over this confirmation bias and actually realize it's not about me. He's actually really busy or not a great communicator. There could be so many reasons that have nothing to do with me, but often our brain just leads us to this one solution that we just can't loop out of. And I think this is why I find confirmation bias like such a tricky one. It is a protect self-protection kind of thing, but on the other side, it does sabotage your relationship with people.
It is very tricky, and it perpetuates the stories that we default to, the kind of stories we come up with about ourselves and about other people. So it's self-sabotage and sabotaging relationships with other people. And it kind of reminds me of being in a science experiment. Like you start with a hypothesis about a situation, and then instead of being neutral and looking for evidence to either prove or disprove it, you're just picking out the evidence to prove yourself right. And every time we've said, I told you, see, I knew that, I told you so. That's probably a result of the confirmation bias there.
Totally. And it could have to do with the amygdala. I'm just kidding. It's a left brain, right brain kind of problem. No, I'm just kidding you. We
No
don't want
episode is
to geek
complete.
out. We don't want to geek out too much. These are really tricky biases, I want to say. When you are an expert on this, but when I went into research about this to prep for this episode, I have to say that I confused especially the confirmation bias with projection. Because with my psychology background, projection is a typical thing, but that's more like you assume something about someone before they maybe act. Whereas the confirmation bias is someone does one thing and your brain is trying to explain to you they're doing it because they don't like you or because you're remote or you're doing something wrong or you're stupid. Like, I don't know. And
It's
then
very
you keep
similar.
looking for the confirmation of that. So yeah, I trained my amygdala to also research better. I keep saying that word.
No episode is complete without mentioning the amygdala once, at least once.
All right, let's move on to the next big bias, and that is the likability bias. This one is a hard hitter, especially for women, because here the idea is that if a woman especially is nice, we assume that they must be somewhat competent too. They're friendly, they seem competent. But if they're not warm, if they are very assertive, or they're not very agreeable, especially in the kind of work surroundings, we doubt their capability of leadership. We think, oh, they must be cold, they must be bitchy. So that is a tricky one because poor women. For men, not so much, but women, you have to be warm and nice, and then people will like you. Likability bias, not a nice one.
And research backs this too. There's a Harvard study that found that women are penalized more than men for being assertive. So it's the same behavior. If a man is assertive, he puts his foot down, he's seen as competent. But if a woman is being assertive, she's seen as bossy or even bitchy. So same behavior, but different consequences.
I don't like the likability bias. And I think this one is also at fault for messy performance reviews. If someone is great at relationship building, they are maybe more likely to get better reviews, even if they're not hitting the goals. They might charm their way through it. Meanwhile, someone who has very good results but is a little bit of a nerd or not very sociable, they are labeled as not being a team player. And I think many of us who've gone through rounds of running interviews, we've all seen the charming person during the interview who then, when we hire them, fails at doing the simplest task. And that's why I think it's so important to do interviews or performance reviews and any other types of assessments as a group with different people coming in from different angles who also check for different types of competencies. I think some people are naturally more analytical or naturally more sociable, but that doesn't mean that they are good or bad. That just means that we need to not be so lazy with our management, like with our leadership styles. We need to adjust our style accordingly and make sure to help balance them and also to have really balanced teams with all sorts of skill sets rather than just hiring for this one type.
Okay, so this reminds me of a client who got a glowing review, not so glowing review, about how she holds her face in meetings with her team members. So someone told on her and talked to a skip level about how they feel intimidated and they're not sure what she's thinking of. And it's such a vague feedback when someone says how you hold your face, but I read it as, or I heard it as resting bitch face, I guess. So we're coming from so many different cultures and so like such varied backgrounds that it's hard to interpret body language or how people hold themselves or carry themselves a certain way. So likability factor does play a big, big role there. And there's your brand recall as well. What you were talking about, socializing, showing up. I have a lot of opinions about this topic, and probably we need a completely different episode to talk about this. But the whole idea behind when you're socializing or you're dealing with people, even today, like People do business with people, right? People buy from people based on emotions. And likability is such an important thing there that plays a role in whether you're able to convince or sell someone of whatever you're there for as a person, the ideas that you're selling, or if you're selling a product to someone. So, like it or not, this bias is something that's very, very prevalent.
Yeah, and it's important to be conscious of, right? Because this is advertisement all along, right? Like likability bias, you buy from the cute kid, the hot dad, the like whatever, right? So you want to buy those products because you want to be like them or something like that.
All
I
right.
totally get it, and we all fall for it. It's just good to be conscious.
Yes, absolutely. All right. So those were the heavy hitters, the ones we see play out the most and have the biggest impact, but they're not the only ones sneaking into decision making. So let's do a quick lightning round, like rapid fire style, to call out a few more that might be hiding in plain sight. Okay. I'll go first. Egocentric bias. So this one's when you rely too heavily on your own lens. For example, if I could handle that situation so well, they should have too. Gosh, like managers having a world of expectation from the interns and expecting them to know things already, which they have taken, I don't know, 10 to 15 years to learn. Kathy.
Okay, I'll take a double one. Affinity bias and in-group bias. That's about favoring people who are similar to you in your background, language, or even hobbies. So you pass from the same business school, you're my inner circle. Bias would be like if you are part of my organization, then I'd favor you in that peer review. The in-group bias would be like, if you are part of my org, I'd favor you in that peer review over the outsider. You go next, Tanu.
Authority bias, giving more credit or weight to someone just because they're senior. Something we see over and over again, especially with the Asian population. So, well, we Asians grow up in hierarchy culture, so we give away our power from day one, whether the senior in front of us deserves it or not. And we tend to put them on a pedestal. So everything they say is gospel. Whatever they're thinking is well thought through, and that's what authority bias is.
Horns bias. I love this one. That sounds crazy. Horns bias. One mistake or bad moment colors your entire view of someone. For example, a person presented not so well, so clearly they can't be capable of managing the whole project well either. So you got the horns on and you never get them off.
Recency bias, where you overweigh the latest interaction and ignore the bigger picture. So I totally had that with my leader, where he attended one call where I was struggling through a demo, which I had no idea I was going to be doing on that call. I was thrown into that situation and I had no direction from leadership. It was totally sprung on me. And in my performance review, he brings it up as something that I should be working on to improve. He attended that one call. He didn't even attend any of the following calls to see how things got better and how things improved. And he completely ignored everything else that I had done excellently.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. And that's not just a business issue, but I think also in private life, if people judge you on the last interaction, and there is a quote by German author Rilke, and I'm paraphrasing, but it says something like, never judge a relationship by the last interaction. And I totally remind myself of that to keep that perspective, because I think if you're just judged on the last time you failed or the last little bit, it just feels lazy. From your leader, it feels lazy. Like they didn't watch you until they had it in their calendar. They have to performance review you next week. So they just started gathering some examples now. That feels like they're just not very good bosses. And in friendships or in personal life, I think people can have a bad day. Maybe they come across bitchy or not very engaged. That doesn't mean they're suddenly that person.
Yeah, exactly. Benefit of the doubt. It's a very rare commodity today.
Another one from me, attribution bias. And that is when someone messes up, it's just who they are. When you mess up, it's the situation. So, another example of not giving the benefit of the doubt. to someone, but cutting a lot of slack for yourself. So this happens a lot with lateness, especially in working cultures where punctuality is a big value, or even country cultures where punctuality is a big value. Being late is equated with lazy or careless. I want to add that being German, this bias, the attribution bias, really works in my favor because I am always late, but people don't notice. And I believe it is because of that bias, because I'm German and there's a strong German attribute of being punctual. So I can be late all I want because I'm German. It's something that's just being overlooked. Being punctual is what people perceive me as, full stop. I love that. So attribution bias can work in your favor if you are from a culture that has certain very positive attributes. But obviously, that's not always the case.
Oh, I think that also goes against you when they expect you to be put together and extremely efficient, like German efficiency.
Yeah, but they always assume that of me anyway. Everything I do is, oh, you're so efficient. Like, oh, I have to rush home to feed the dog. Oh, you're so efficient. Like, literally.
Great. There are some positives. Next one is proximity bias. So that's giving more visibility and trust to people you physically see more, or even I would say it applies to the Zoom calls where you're hearing a certain person talk more often, speaking up more, even on chats, right? So as a leader, if you're seeing one or two people constantly participating in group chats or speaking up more, asking more questions, you think or assume they're more tuned into work and they're more trustworthy. So you end up giving them more opportunities just because they have more visibility around you. So at the end of the day, everything about biases at workplace, at least, comes down to one fundamental issue. You are judging someone's capability based on a shortcut, not the truth. And when you do that, you might end up plugging a square peg into a round hole, or worse, you miss out on the right person or the right opportunity entirely.
Totally. And bias isn't just a DEI thing. It's a business thing, a leadership thing, a human thing. It's a personal growth thing. And the more aware you are, the better choices you make. After, you know, us dropping all of this heavy info, we are not going to leave you high and dry now, though. Here's something you can actually do about it. A quick three-step check-in you can use next time when you have to make a people decision, whether you're hiring, giving feedback, or just assigning a project. First step is pause. Ask yourself, is this a gut reaction or a learned assumption? Second step, reframe. What else could be true here? What would I think if this was someone else? And the third thing to ask yourself would be to redirect. What's one action that aligns with the values I want to lead with? And it's not about being perfect. It's just about catching yourself before you default into automatic or old ways of thinking.
Yeah, because whether you like it or not, your bias could negatively impact someone's life and also negatively impact the business. So this is not about being all woo-woo if you don't believe in that and you want to only focus on the business aspect of it. A reminder that you are leaving money on the table if you're coming from a place of bias. And one final tip, make bias checking a team sport. Normalize feedback, reflection, and perspective taking in your org. Bias is wired in, but accountability, that's a learned skill and it's a game changer.
And that's a wrap.
Thanks for hanging out with us on Coach Me. Got a question or something you want us to coach through? Slide into our DMs or drop us a message. We might feature it on the next episode.
And hey, don't forget to hit follow. Your future self will thank you. Just one more quick note. Everything we share here is based on our own experiences and coaching tools. It's not medical or mental health advice. So if you're struggling or need support, please reach out to a qualified professional. You've got this, and we've got you. See you next time on Coach Me. That's it.